Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. It's a glorious day. Happy Friday. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. For those of you that are listening, thank you again. And if you are driving or preparing for your holiday weekend, just do it safely, but have some fun. It is the day that we talk about the economy. It's the first Friday of the month on G's Power Hour, and we're here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning. How are you doing today?
All right. I know you're running and gunning, so we'll try to get started and get into things. Now, I was supposed to originally try to hang out with Paul today at his new dig, but just got backed up today, so we're going to do that next one because we're going to go in a particular direction next month on the show. But anyway, thanks for taking the time out, Paul. And so let's go ahead and get started with the thing that we always really try to incorporate on the first Friday because it's the jobs report. So give us a little insight on that.
Yeah, so as I always say, the jobs indicator or the unemployment report is my favorite economic indicator because it gives us such a true read of where our economy is going and where we are currently. As it stands right now, we're continuing to add jobs to our economy at a slower but increasing rate as compared to, you know, the early onset or coming back from the pandemic. So in the month of June, we added 850,000 new non-farm payroll jobs to our economy, which exceeded the expectations of 760,000 new jobs. In addition to that, the month of May and the month of April saw positive revisions. So those numbers that were originally a little somewhat depressed or lackluster compared to what we were expecting, we're a little bit higher and revised higher. So overall, that tells us that we are moving in the right direction in the recovery from this pandemic-induced recession that we were in and that we're still continuing to add jobs to our economy, which is overall a very, very positive thing. Right now, the unemployment rate does stand at 5.9%, which is a slight marginal uptick from where it was previously, but it has increased for positive reasons. The participation rate increased slightly, which means there's more people that are of the working age, which we classify as 16 to 65, that are actually engaged and looking for employment. Now, a lot of that is a result of many states pulling back on their unemployment aid. So it has encouraged people to jump back into the labor market, which is a whole other dynamic in itself to discuss. But overall, it is positive for the economy that we have more people in the labor force that are actively looking for work, and we have an increased amount of people that are actively getting placed in those jobs.
So now you made the distinguishment right at the beginning of non-farm worker jobs. Why do you do that? What is the key significance of that?
So we understand that there's two areas of our economy that are highly cyclical. And they could have large fluctuations at any given point in time, typically within a 30-day period. And those two areas of our economy are energy and food. So we typically strip out those areas or anything that's related to production in those areas to get a true read of the growth of our economy. We try not to let the data be skewed by those. For instance, gas prices have increased significantly over the last, you know, month or 2 months, but that could not truly reflect on the amount of new jobs that are coming about. And the reason we strip out farming payrolls is historically we have seen a lot of seasonal trends when it comes to farming products. In Florida, you know, you'll have citrus that does better in the warmer months historically. Wheat will do better in some of the cooler months in other states and things of that nature. So we try to strip that out because there is a lot of seasonal employment and there's a lot of seasonal unemployment that comes in the data during those particular in those particular sectors. So we strip that out to reduce any of the noise in the numbers.
Okay, so I understand that. That makes sense. So what are the jobs that we're seeing, the job areas that we're seeing the most growth in?
Very good question. So fortunately, we're seeing the most growth in some of the areas that we've seen the largest amount of pain in going into this, this recession. So the hospitality and leisure sectors are the ones that grew the strongest over this last month, you know, adding a significant amount of jobs. So the sector added 343,000 jobs, which is more than half of them were honestly through restaurants and bars. But when you look at the total number of about 850,000 jobs added to our economy, that hospitality and leisure sector makes up about 45% of what was added, or roughly 40% or so of what was added to the economy. Good for our overall national economy and very good for our local economy. We know here in the state of Florida, especially in Central Florida, hospitality and leisure drives our overall economic activity. And it's a pretty much the spine and the backbone of what the area has been built off of here. And the same is true nationally. Many of our restaurants are smaller restaurants, mom-and-pop restaurants, and the more entertainment and the more spending that we see in those hospitality and that leisure area, it leads us to believe that the economy is going to grow much stronger when you have those smaller companies that are able, you know, to survive financially.
Now, were the indicators not there? And the reason I ask is because it seems that some of this happened somewhat unexpectedly, or it caught some people off guard where they weren't prepared. They don't have some of the product. They don't have some of the staffing. And so, you know, they're doing things like maybe cutting hours or streamlining menus. And when I look at some of the stuff at the restaurants, or they'll have disclaimers that we don't have, we may run out of some of this, or we don't have that. So were the indicators not there, or were they just not being paid attention to?
I think the indicators were there, and I think there was attention being paid to it. It's just from a corporate standpoint, if you're running a franchise of restaurant and you're dealing with higher input costs and you're dealing with lower employees, lower staffing or labor, you have to really gauge your productivity in other areas. And some of the things that you can control is if you're typically ordering, let's just say, from a particular farmer or a particular producer, $5,000, you know, $50,000 worth of chicken every month, you may have to scale that back in some cases and say, well, let's only do $40,000. Which we know that our demand is still higher than that, but our capacity to supply that demand is just not there, whether it's just because we have a shortage in labor, those being able to, you know, keep those stores open in different areas or whatever the case may be. there could be a significant reason to cause that constraint. It's very similar, and it's a very peculiar time that we are in right now. Typically in the evolution of a business, you'll get to where the business is open, and then you'll hit a growth phase where you're growing so quickly that you're, you know, backfilling a lot of things. You're hiring employees to catch up to your growth. You're stocking up on supplies to catch up to the demand for your product or your services. And then you get to a mature phase where you're able to manage all that on a monthly basis. Unfortunately, every organization across our country, whether it was an organization that was in a mature phase or if it was an emerging organization, essentially went through a growth phase again. You know, we were at a process where everyone is starting to grow again, and supply management is being challenged at this point in time to keep up with those demands. And at the same time that there's being challenged, you do have an increase in amount of input costs that are coming up, such as energy, the amount of gas that you have to put into things, the cost of labor is increased. So all of those things are different factors and different variants that the organizational leaders are taking into appreciation and taking into their factors. And it, unfortunately, it's not as easy as just turning on the spigot and just putting more, you know, chicken in supply. It has to be ordered. It has to go through the full assembly process. And sometimes that could take 2 months or 3 months, you know, to get things back online like they were before.
Okay. I know that one of the things that has occurred, it has been the push to increase minimum wages, which I have seen, you know, in this effort to draw people back into the workforce. You know, they're still not where some people would like them, but they have gone up, you know, with some sign-up bonuses as well. Now, is because of the increase in wages, is that going to stunt some of the job growth in a few months, next few months? Do you think
it's very possible that it can? It is you know, one thing that many economists are looking at is whether how all of this will play out. So we're at a point where you typically don't have wage inflation when you have a large subset of the economy unemployed. Typically, you have wage deflation because the suppliers of labor, the suppliers of the jobs that can dictate what the ticket says and what you're going to get paid, and those that are looking for jobs have to accept it. So right now, you know, it's kind of, I guess, like that buyer's market in real estate where employees can kind of dictate what they want to get paid and shift around until they find that in a certain degree. So it's very possible that we could see a constraint, especially in certain sectors of our economy. When you look at the healthcare sector, just breaking it down from CNA, LPN to RN, you have a different levels of nursing aid that can be provided to, let's say, an employer like a hospital. If you have certain employers are like, let's just take McDonald's, for instance, that's often $15 for an hour, same-day pay, $2,500 of tuition assistance. Those CNAs that are making $11 an hour are disenfranchised from working in that position when they can work at McDonald's. Now, you know, it could get to a point where, you know, the CNAs may stay there because they'll choose to work in that environment. But it'll get to a point where the employer, the hospital, will say, we'll have to increase these salaries in order to keep up with the wage inflation in our country. So if we bump CNAs up, we have to bump up LPNs. We have to bump up RNs. We have to bump up our nurse practitioners, doctors, and so on and so on. So you'll get to a point where hospital CFOs will have to make a decision as to the type of talent construction that they're going to have employed. It may get to a point where they say, we no longer see the need to have the CNA altogether. We're going to drop having CNAs and just focus on having RNs or LPNs. So that may eliminate and cause structural unemployment in a whole segment of that little market. And those are things that anecdotally that we anticipate that we'll see across many different sectors of our economy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're standing in the financial sector. I believe it was Bank of America that said that all of their employees by 2023 will be making at least $50,000 or something like that a year.
Mm-hmm.
So for those associates that were working with Bank of America that may be making $60,000 a year and they're not going to get that raise, and you realize that the person that was a teller that was making maybe $28,000 is now going to get that $22,000 raise and they're going to be working just making just a little bit less than you, working at a much less capacity, it could disenfranchise some of those mid-level managers within the organization, and then that will create another stagnant effect on wage inflation. So there's a huge possibility that we could see a drag on hiring as a result of those increases. But I think we'll get to a point, just like with supply and demand, and old school economics always tells us that we will receive a point of equilibrium at some place where supply equals demand. So right now, wage inflation is taking the lead, but it could be at a point, especially if we see an abrupt stop to all of the government aid out there, where it becomes more of a seller's market and more of a sellers of those that labor will be able to dictate really what the wage is worth.
Well, the thing about it is, though, it almost seems like it's a vicious cycle in a way. But, I mean, the wages kind of have to go up because everything else is going up. Eating, driving, housing, all of that is gone up. So, I mean, if you have a mortgage payment, you can't necessarily reduce, some people have already done as much of a reduction as they can with the mortgage payment by refinancing. There's only so much that they're going to let you go down in your mortgage payment, But other things may be going up. Taxes may be going up. Insurance definitely has been going up. So even if you get the principal, the interest rate down, the principal may or may not stay the same, and the taxes and insurance are going up. So you need the extra money for that, in addition to, higher gas prices and higher food prices. So, what do you do? But we're going to talk more about that when we come back. We are here with Paul Lee Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. If you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Here with Paul Lee Shelton of Warwick Shore in beautiful Baldwin Park in Orlando. And the number, if you have questions, is 516-387-1944. And so, Paul, what do you do? Like I said, if you don't, even with the small amount, and I'm saying small, sorry, corporate America, I know it may, it's going to add up for you with the number of employees and all that, the raises and stuff, but it's still the amount that goes up is kind of minuscule when it comes to comparing how much gas prices are going up. I mean, $3, almost $3 I am so thankful for my Sam's Club membership right now because it has not gotten there, at least last I checked, which was either yesterday or day before yesterday. So, you know, how do you manage all of this? What is going to be the trigger to kind of, I guess, level things out or bring things back to where it's manageable for people?
It's hard. It's really hard. That's where financial planning comes into play, being able to try to plan for these events and things that arise out of that. You know, one of the things that I always revert back to, and I say it's paramount, you know, the more education you have, the more you'll grow, the more financial stability that you can kind of secure yourself with. It's not a fail-safe, but it's always best to have that. And planning for these things, you're very correct. We've seen increases in food prices. We see increases in groceries. When I mean food prices, we're seeing it in groceries when we go to the grocery store. But we've also seen it on the retail end. I believe Chipotle recently had a price increase, and several restaurants are having price increases without, you know, advertising it like Chipotle has. We've seen that increase in gas prices, which, you know, when we see those increases in food and in energy and gas, that essentially acts as a de facto tax against the citizens, American citizens, because we have to pay for those things. We can't get around food costs unless we're off the grid and we're growing our own crops and things of that nature, have our own cattle, but still there's a you have to pay for the feed for the cattle and everything. So it's kind of hard to get around it. It's hard getting around without being able to use and buy gas. So that's a necessity that we need at all times. And those things are really what drives kind of the inflation that hurts our wallet and hurts our pocketbook. So you have to be ever mindful of that and be prudent and look for ways where you can cut your bills. You know, some of the things that maybe luxury items you may be able to do without are, you know, see if you can scale back on your subscriptions that we use on a monthly basis, weekly basis, and to try to accommodate for those increases.
Sorry. Okay, so, we, you know, and by the way, you all, they are doing advanced movie screenings again. So that's one way to kind of cut back on your entertainment budget is to go find those advanced movie screenings and enjoy free movies when you can. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of the retail sector and the hospitality sector, you know, these are the ones, like you said, that kind of were the first to go, and now they're coming back. However, do you foresee a lot of people, the majority of people or the same amount of people going back to these sectors? I know some have. I know the numbers are in some cases, especially like with airlines, they have said in some cases are like pre-pandemic levels. But there are some people that have gotten quite comfortable in ordering stuff online or using services such as DoorDash and Uber and all those type of stuff and are almost becoming hermits. Maybe those delivery sectors are growing a little bit, but do you see the regular, the traditional retail and hospitality going back to normal or traditional, I guess you could say, entertainment? Because we also have to include the increase in certain the use of services such as Netflix and Hulu and stuff like that, too, versus going back to the actual theater.
I think that there is a demand and there is an appetite for re-engagement in public places and returning to that entertainment level that we've seen before, specifically with entertainment. And I kind of separate those two, entertainment and retail, when it comes to shopping, because many things, like you mentioned, are done online. You can purchase anything essentially online. You know, whenever I need AC filters or anything, everything is ordered online. So to a certain degree,
I'm sitting up and looking at a box of AC filters that my husband just purchased.
I just purchased all them too for my office and for home. And it's convenient to be able to purchase it and have it delivered to you, and then it comes to you in either like a 3 or 6 month supply. So you don't have to go to that store every day and remember this. Now, there are some things that you know, if you need it today, you may have to pick it up and run out to the store and get it. But, I mean, Amazon is stepping up their game, and there's a lot of same-day delivery across many retailers out there. So we know we've talked about that retail apocalypse before, how there's going to be potentially a permanent shift away from certain retailers and certain retail environments. So I think that's still going to continue to play out to a certain degree. When it comes to entertainment, I think as we get more shows back on the radar, more concerts back on the radar, I think there is an appetite for people to go out and have live entertainment. We've seen that so far as sports have reopened. Sports fully, reopened. But if you look at, the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs that are going on right now, those stadiums have essentially been at full capacity. And they've been able to handle it. There's even with the Delta strand of COVID-19 out there, we're not hearing about these stadiums and these sporting events being epicenters or super spreader events for COVID-19, at least not at this point. There is fear that, 3 or 4 months down the line, we may see something else come about, especially when flu season hits, maybe in the winter, fall and winter. But as of now, I think there is that appetite for at least entertainment, for people to get back out and explore entertainment. This summer will really be a test of that. I would say recently, looking around the country in different areas, looking at different destination spots around the area to go to for vacations, a lot of hotels are starting to show that they're either booked to capacity or there's limited rooms left. If you look at different cities and different areas around the country. And it's mostly, it's very strategic. We're seeing a lot of places that are within 5 hours from another city that are being booked up. So that's telling me that people are not really looking to travel via air, but they're more convenient with traveling by car to certain destinations. Maybe it's driving 3 or 4 hours, to get to the beach or somewhere else in a country to take a vacation during the summer. We're seeing a lot of that. And I think a lot of that is a part of the pandemic. We were all shuttered inside in our own domiciles together as a family, so it makes it easier and cheaper for us to travel that way. But we are seeing a lot of bookings in those hotels creep up. We're seeing air travel creep up. We haven't seen the business travel come back, which was a big portion of it, but a lot of personal travel is back. So I think it's going to be a little bifurcated when it comes to the retail sector. We're going to continue to see kind of what we saw before, but with entertainment, I think we may see a little bit more of that leisure and hospitality come back into play.
Yeah, I know. I was going to try to go to the Clearwater Jazz Festival this year in October, and I'm already having issues trying to find. It's a very popular event anyway, but the fact that, I guess it's back and stuff like that, people jumped on it, and I'm already having issues trying to find a place to, a nice, relatively inexpensive place to stay for that. But,
yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. So. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We are talking the economy with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. If you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. By the way, as I have been telling y'all need to go see Summer of Soul starts today. And for the Hermits, you can watch it on Hulu. But, just be safe and if you feel up to it. I'm not going to say... I'm not going to demand that anybody goes out because I'm not trying to get sued. But it's relatively safe out there. So, but anyway, however you decide to watch it, please go watch it. But today or tomorrow, it would be really great. Anyway, it's G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the Arglitex. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us on this first Friday of July. Half the year is gone, y'all. a little bit scary, but anyway, you know, we've gotten through it, praise the Lord. And we are here with Paul Lee, Shelton of Warwick Shore, to kind of help us navigate what's going on with our economy. So, Paul, what else should we be kind of turning our attention to? I know for me, of course, because my other business is dealing with housing, is the housing market and where it stands now, and are we at that bubble point, you think? Or we still got a ways to go? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, when it comes to real estate, we still have there are some headwinds ahead of us, I should say, that could slow down our economy. However, the tailwinds that we have working in favor of real estate right now is that we're entering the summer season, which is prime for real estate. That's typically when a lot of people are repositioning themselves for school zones and things of that nature. So you see a lot of buying and selling that are taking place at their time. Real estate values are rich right now. They are pretty rich right now, and there is a certain level of fear out there for people to purchase a new property right now for fear of being purchasing at the top, like many of us Americans did back in 2007. So we potentially could see that could be one of the headwinds that could slow down some of the real estate market. However, right now the Federal Reserve has said they're going to maintain accommodative interest rates, accommodative monetary policy. Interest rates are going to remain low for the foreseeable future, more than likely through the rest of this year. It will be a surprise and possibly a shock to the economy if we do get a rise in interest rates before the December meeting by the Federal Reserve. So with that being the case, you know, cost of money when it comes to, you know, buying a mortgage is still going to be affordable, you know, for most Americans out there. And that will continue to provide a backdrop for, you know, more sales in the real estate market. However, I don't foresee that it will persist in perpetuity. As we know, all things have their cycle. Real estate market, just like everything else, is very cyclical. So we'll get to a point where things that have increased will start to flatline, hit mature growth, and then sort of pursue that trough in there. One interesting thing that I would say that came out of the jobs number is that 21 states in this most recent job number that we saw, 21 states have consistently seen a decrease in the unemployment rate. There was only one state that did see an increase in the unemployment rate. So there's only one state essentially where the economic situation is getting better. I say that to say that as we're seeing all of these, and many of them, and I'm not going to go through the list, but a good portion of them are retirement states and highly populated states, are having increasingly better employment situations. And that bodes well for the real estate market as well. It gives more confidence to those consumers in those states to go out and shop, to go out and buy, and to really consume the local products there. So that's something that we'll continue to see. It will be interesting to see what takes place in the fall when we're not in a typical peak season for real estate, and see how prices respond to that in that nature.
Yeah, and like I say, you know, no time like the present to plan, because, you know, no better present than to get yourself a house for Christmas. I mean, that's just always been my thing. You know.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice house, you know, nice tree, you know, in the right place, you know, for Christmas or whatever. Family and friends over, entertain and stuff. You know, that's
yeah,
that's
we make it a December to remember, I guess, like last
year. Yes. Yes, indeed, indeed. All right, so, goodness gracious. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is the, I guess, overall economy in general and, you know, the deficit and, you know, do we really, are we, is there a reason to worry about where things are going?
There is, I would say, you know, quite frankly, there's reason to, you know, worry may not be the exact word, you shouldn't stay up and stress about it, but keep your eye on it, to have that level of concern and understanding of what's going on with our national debt and how it is increasing and what the ramifications are of that national debt increasing at the pace that it is. It's very possible that like I've been saying and I've been forecasting that we're going to see higher inflation and higher taxes at the same time, potentially in the next 15 years. And it could be a sustained period of higher inflation and taxes, no matter who, what political party is in charge. And that's because of all of the national debt that we have. We have to pay for it somewhere. It can only be, you know, so much of our liquidity in the market has been, you know, realized in the stock market. We've seen a significant rise in the stock market. A lot of liquidity that was pumped out to individuals, you know, went into investments in the stock market, and we've seen that rise, and we've benefited from that rise. However, there still is a significant potential that all of that excess that's still left out there, that liquidity that's out there that we have already borrowed from the U.S. government and from other governments, we have to pay for it. We have to pay it back. We have to pay it out. And it has to be paid for in some way. The only way you can is to pay for your debt is to reduce your spending, for one. And that means from a government level, we will have to cut out some of the subsidies. We will have to cut out some of the things that we need, such as early childhood education and things that we don't want to cut out and that we spend on. Or we have to derive more revenue, have a bigger income to pay for things. And from a government level, that means higher taxation. So if we're able to tax people more or have a higher revenue from taxing, then that helps us right-size the deficit that we're in. Unfortunately, we are seeing organic inflation, as we mentioned, in food and energy already. Gas prices are higher, food prices are higher. So we're seeing that taking place already. When taxes go up, that's always a lagging indicator. It's a lagging implementator, I should say, as well. Legislation will pass, but it won't be for maybe one tax cycle or two tax cycles in the future to where you really realize it, or to where it really penalizes individuals and corporations. So, you know, both of those things are rising as a result of our national debt, and it's directly correlated to it. And
who holds the bulk of our debt?
Unfortunately, it's our neighbors on the other side of the sea, so China.
Mm-hmm.
China owns a huge bulk of our debt. So that's something to consider.
Yep. And now I wanted to ask you, because these factors, do they play, how significant of a role do they play in the restructuring of our community? And what I mean, for example, if gas prices are going up, isn't it, I guess, more feasible for a person looking for, let's say, a new place to live, to find something maybe closer to their job where they're not either not buying as much gas or even being able to bike to work? You know, are these the type of things that influence the decisions in terms of how communities are developed in the future?
They are. In the community in which my office is in, being developed in early 2000, you got to remember we were at a time then in 2000 and 2006 and 7 where gas prices were at all-time highs and increasing significantly, and that's where the whole live-work-play structure came about. So I think that, you know, as we go back through that cycle again and we're seeing higher input costs, higher gas prices, we're going to have more people that are going to desire to be centrally located closer to either public transportation or closer to their jobs directly and not really look forward to that long commute up and down the interstate, up and down I-4, whatever the case may be, to get to work. So that could bode well for the real estate market. People are looking to really, to, you know, relocate for those purposes, but it does change the construct and what communities will look like. We're definitely going to see.
I'm sorry, because I really need to talk about this point. Doesn't that make it harder for minority or multi-ethnic or multicultural communities? Because in a lot of those communities, there are not high-paying jobs, and there are not, like, professional types of jobs. I hate to say that. You know, there's some small businesses that are sprinkled in, here and there, but usually in a lot of those communities, you find convenience stores or fast food restaurants, you know, those types of jobs. And so what can be done to, I guess, modify those communities so that the people, because also these are the people that probably, unfortunately, make less of the income in the community as a whole. So if anybody needs to have, let's say, a better paying job, or if not a better paying job, access to things like better health care, better grocery stores. You know, they say these are the places also that have food deserts, all of that type of stuff. And I know I'm kind of maybe going on a tangent, but I'm trying to really get people to understand and draw the, you know, correlation between what happens in what communities and why, let's say, some of these communities remain the poorest communities in the community at large, and what needs to, I guess, be corrected. Am I off?
No, you're not off, and you raise a very, very important issue that we're dealing with right now in our society, and it's actually contributing to the wealth gap that we have in our society. Many of those underprivileged communities are food deserts, meaning they don't have adequate grocery stores. They don't have the restaurants and the healthy eating that should be in the communities. And they're also, I add to that, they're also financial deserts, so they often don't have financial institutions that support the community, or those professional jobs, like you said, that are located in those communities that provide them with convenient employment in those communities. And when you look at it from that standpoint too, when you don't have that, then you have less revenue in those communities. You have less tax dollars, tax revenue that's coming in from real estate taxes to help those communities and those small towns and cities grow that are underprivileged at this point in time. So it's really, really hard to get that to grow. And where it's going to really come in is the It's going to be the social responsibility of many corporations to be able to step up and say, we identify this as an area of concern, and we're going to make an investment in these communities. Getting partnerships between real estate developers and corporations to say, listen, we've identified these food deserts around town, and we see, for example, Eatonville, Florida is a food desert. There's a public market, supermarkets all around it, but none within it. How do we?
Well, that's not the only community that's like that. I have said that, you know, a company like that has created a black hole, because I've even seen it in my area that as it's become more, you know, multicultural, or, you know, that companies that like that have moved further and further out, you know, and I've seen it because I've lived here, and it's because my father, when he retired, got a part-time job at one of those stores, you know, and it was down the street, you know, and then they shuttered that one, and they moved it further out and further away, you know, and unfortunately, some of these companies have a history that, you know, and, you know, it would be nice if, you know, they made better efforts to try to serve these communities, because what is happening is that the people in these communities that are making the least amount of money in our community as a whole have to drive either outside of their community to get food and gas and other stuff, or they have to stay in their community and deal with, in, and I'm not saying with every business in that community, but in some of those communities, with subpar goods or services. For example, the gas station that is within walking distance from me is almost $3. I drive 3 miles further to go get gas at Sam. Why? Because it's worth it. My Sam's membership makes it worth it, because the gas prices are about 30 cents less per gallon at Sam's than they are at the gas station and walking distance. I asked the guy at one point in time, you know, why is it that, you know, your gas is so much more expensive than I can go to Sam's and everything? And I know I pay membership, but it balances itself out. And, he's, you know, basically his thing was, well, he's basically the only game in town. So if you need gas, and especially if you are desperate where you need gas, you know, there you go. You're going right up the street, and you're not, you know, doing the shopping around. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are probably not also not using those gas apps and other cost-cutting apps to try to save a few bucks. Yeah, so. I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent.
I completely understand, and I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Anyway, going to take our final break, and when we come back, we're going to probably talk about some of the other stuff we were supposed to talk about. But anyway, we are here with Paul B. Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is Steve's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. This is first Friday of the month. We're talking the economy. And if you have questions or comments, the number is 516-387-1944. And we will be right back.
Swiffer Sweeper cleans so completely, you'll never go back to your old broom again.
Now a song for Mary from a Mr. Broom.
New Swiffer Sweepers redesigned to clean corners, and it traps and locks 50% more dirt, dust, and hair than a broom. So go all the way clean. New Swiffer. Clean better or your money back. Guaranteed.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-5000. 7720 Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks for being with us on this 4th of July weekend. We are here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore. The number, if you have questions or comments, is 516-387-1944. So we've gotten through the first half of 2021. And so we got another half to go, and not necessarily trying to rush it, but we're trying to, I guess, navigate our way through it, because of the uncertainty. Like you said, I mean, you as an economist and others in your area expertise, aren't necessarily being able to predict some of what is happening with our economy. But what are the things that we should be addressing right now? I know one of the things I wanted to ask you, and I think we're going to have to maybe schedule another show for it, is I understand that teens are getting a lot of jobs right now, which is good, but at the same time, because of the cut in the unemployment, you have some people, older Americans, that are scrambling for some of those same jobs just because they need, to fill some of that gap. Is it time to reevaluate and reassess how retirement works in this country?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I think it is. We haven't had a significant shift in retirement in a long time. So back in the 80s, right around then, we had legislation that brought us, a lot of the IRAs. It may have been late 70s. It brought us the ability to have 401k plans, the IRAs, and things of that nature, the whole retirement plan account where it can be individualized outside of a pension. Pensions were something that were dying away at that time, and right now, there's very, very few places that do have a pension. If you're lucky enough to have a pension, more power to you. But we saw that shift then, but we really haven't seen much of a change in it. We've seen some adjustments to our retirement system, such as, extensions and the RMD requirements that people have to take, the required minimum distributions, the ages for that, the amount of money we can pull out of a retirement account, the ages in which we can pull money out without having those penalties, 10% penalties and things of that nature. But I think that we do need to reevaluate our retirement system, especially on the corporate level, from the 401k level, because I've always been a proponent for, like I mentioned at the top of our show, education. If we can encourage our employees to pursue education, and if we can make that available for them through their retirement plan, through their 401k, by allowing the employer to give them more dollars and allowing them to receive those dollars from the 401k without any penalties or taxation when it comes to education, then that drives the overall good of the economy. It allows, those individuals to really take part in their education. And, some people say, well, we should just open it up so that corporations can just give more tuition, assistance or reimbursement. And that's another way to do it, too. But sometimes, when it's given to you for free, you don't appreciate it. And you don't take advantage, of it like you should if you're paying for it. So if you're pulling X amount of dollars from your, retirement account, or you're paying yourself today for education from any contribution your employer gave you from you having that money in the future, you're going to take it seriously, and you're going to be invested in whatever it is that you're studying, and it's going to create an overall economic good, not only locally on a micro level for your organization, but actually on a macro level for the overall common good of society. So I think that is one area that we do need to see a change in is in, our retirement structure, especially when it comes to educational benefits.
Okay. All right. So just FYI, y'all, we are going to talk a little bit about It's you know, August, back to school month. We are going to talk a little bit about preparing for tuition and stuff like that, whether it's college or whether it's secondary school, you know, things that to kind of plan for education for your kids. So just, you know, make sure that's going to be part of our show next month. So make sure you join us for that. So what are you? What are some last minute tips that you have for us, Paul?
So just, you know, being aware and being cognizant of the, you know, of the season that we're in right now, of the business cycle and of our economy heading into the summer season, we typically see a lot more driving. We typically see an increase in energy prices, which we're seeing right now, which will lead. I know energy, crude oil is traded at just above, right at $74.99, 97 cents, if I look at my chart right now. That means that we're going to see an increase in gas prices. It is predicted by some economists that it's very possible for us to reach $100 a barrel by September, which would be a significant increase in a short amount of time in gas prices. That could take us potentially to a national average somewhere around $4 and change, upward of $4.50 and change on a national average for gas. That will be a, like I mentioned before, that will be a significant tax burden on all of Americans out there. So pay close attention to that. Something else that could affect those energy prices too is the communications between the OPEC. I mean, they delayed their meeting yesterday in their decision on increasing the amount of supply into the market. They want to keep it constrained a little bit so that they can have an increase in prices. It's all supply and demand economics. So that is still yet to be seen. Also, any particular tension that may arise between the U.S. and Middle East, any geopolitical tension could add some unnecessary or unwanted headwinds when it comes to our overall economic markets and especially the energy markets as well, because we do have the Middle East as a large producer of global energy. So those are some of the things that, you know, I will be looking out for and keeping an eye on in the near term. But like as we mentioned, we're going back to school, and COVID-19 has not disappeared altogether yet, though it seems like it in certain cases, because we're maskless now in most cases, and you know, everyone is back and open. But that Delta strand of COVID-19 is out, and when you hear speak with, you know, people in hospitals, it's scarier in some cases for people than the original strand of COVID-19, and it seems like it is more prevalent in pediatric cases in some areas around the country. So that's very interesting, because as we go back to school in August and September, what will that mean for many of the schools? I mean, will we get to a point where schools may have to close again? Some schools may have to close for 2 weeks if there's an outbreak of cases there. And what does that mean for mom and dad? Will mom and dad have to take that time off work? And how does that affect the overall economy? So those are some of the things that I am keeping my eyes on over the next 2 to 3 months, and praying and hoping that, you know, all is well and goes back smoothly when kids return to school this fall, and that we can finally stamp out COVID-19 altogether.
Paul, thanks so much. Really appreciate your time today, and have a great July and wonderful and enjoyable holiday weekend, and please be safe.
Thank you so much, and same to you. Happy 4th. I pray all is well, and God bless.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. Now, I want you to enjoy your holiday weekend, but just keep your eyes and ears open. Like I said, one, go watch Summer of Soul, whether it's on Hulu or however you feel comfortable doing it, do that this weekend. Number two, you know, like I said, you can listen to some of the food safety shows we've had on, you know, because we want you to be safe as well as having fun this holiday weekend. Three, yes, we have our first hurricane. Yes, we do. Hurricane Elsa, and so please keep an eye on that. Number four, you know, stay in prayer, please. We need to have people that need it. In addition to stay safe. In addition to COVID, we still have those people down in South Florida where they're trying to do the recovery. And unfortunately, if we have bad weather, that is going to probably put another halt for a while to any type of hopeful recovery efforts with the condo collapse. So please keep the family and friends and the victims and the workers in that area in much-needed prayer. So please do that. Love y'all. God bless. Be well. Be safe. Be blessed. This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good. Entertainment. Thank you, Princess. Please remember, y'all, all real power comes from God. Take care.
Now it's good to serve your feet.